It's still a little bit surreal. I know that sounds ridiculous because I got my author copy right before Christmas. It was like my little Christmas present.
Christmas
I went to the
present.
Office. Yeah, and it was so sweet. My editor, Georgia, had it like wrapped in this eco-friendly like fabric book bag like
Very
under their
cool.
tiny tabletop Christmas tree and stuff. And so I got to unwrap it. So that was really magical. But it's been a kind of A4 Word document for so long on my computer. Printed out a few times, like editing over the many years, and then to see it in book form now, and it's just like Fremantle Press have gone in and just like made it very pretty, done this little, you know, and it, I mean the cover is just.
I was just gonna say it's so beautiful. Sometimes you look at a book and you think, oh, because you do judge a book by its cover,
yeah,
but this
absolutely.
Is so gorgeous. Can you tell us a bit about the design and the choices in the colors and things like that?
Yeah, it's really been out of my hands. Fremantle Press have been so lovely, and it's really felt like a collaborative experience all the way through. I've always felt like as an author, I could kind of go, whoa, I don't like that, and they would respect that.
Yeah.
But they sort of asked about cover, and I just said, you know what, have fun with it. Like, I know what I don't want, and I know you won't do that.
Yeah.
So this was a complete surprise. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right. I had no idea they were going to do the hummingbird. I had no idea the colors. Yeah. The hummingbird with kind of entangled in the intricate kind of tumbleweed was pretty early. They had that on like a white background.
Sure.
And we kind of went back and forth. And then, yeah, I had no idea they were going to go with this like dark navy with like the bright fuchsia letters.
I love the contrast of. They really have taken good care of it. A lot of trust there.
Yeah, absolutely. But I felt that the whole way through. I mean, it helps that my husband's previously published through them. So I already, you know, when I won the Fogarty, the very next morning went in to go sign the contract. And I just felt like I was being welcomed to people that, you know, it's like a house party going to like friend's house or something. Like that's
house party
I
for
felt.
Nerds. Yeah.
House party for nerds. Yes. Book nerds. It's the best kind of house party.
invite me to that. I'm on the guest list for that house party. Catherine, I'm really interested in the process of this book because it's structured so purposefully and has this wonderful simmering tension throughout, which I know was very intentional. But I do believe the pandemic got in the way of a lot of the writing process. Can you tell me a bit more about that?
Yeah, the pandemic, if you had told me before the pandemic that I would just be sat at home basically for a year and a half, getting to work from home, not having the commute, I would have gone writer's dream.
Sounds great.
It sounds awesome. It was so hard though, because I mean, I think anybody, no matter where you were in the world, even if I know Western Australia didn't experience a lot of the big lockdown that a lot of other places experienced, but there was still this kind of global anxiety. We had no idea what was happening. Things were changing like overnight. It was a very kind of anxious, unsettled, kind of scary time.
Yep.
And none of us knew what to expect. And that, it turns out, is not very conducive to the creative process.
Interesting, because
broadly
speaking, for a lot of people, it was a time of incredible creative endeavor and creative work and really just holding up and getting to do those creative things. But it was the opposite for you.
Yeah, I did a lot of painting. So I know we've talked a bit about like my watercolors on previously. So I did a lot of painting because that didn't require brain power in the same way. It was just enjoyment.
You.
Yeah. And it was more of a physical process. I'd already written first draft of The Skeleton House before the pandemic. So I finished that in 2017, I feel like. Yeah, 2017. And I'd done a few little edits and things and had submitted to competitions and to agents and hadn't had any luck.
Yeah.
I was sort of at the stage where I went, you know, I probably need to do a bigger edit and really look at this manuscript and try to figure out what is not working. And then the pandemic hit, and after a couple months in, it felt like the world was kind of like ending and we were kind of all in purgatory and we're like, we don't know what's happening. And I realized it wasn't letting the modern day narrative breathe.
Yeah, really, really interesting. You mentioned Meg, who is the main character in our story. She's from a small Mormon community in Desert, Nevada, USA, and The Skeleton House, which we should mention does refer to what is quote unquote the forever home of the two characters in the book, Meg and her husband, Kyle. For the listeners, can you explain what The Skeleton House is and what the story is about?
Yeah.
We've been teasing them a little bit too much.
A little bit, yeah. Like, we're just talking, we're setting up the whole world here, but we haven't told you what the story is. Yeah, the title comes from really the first image in the very first chapter of the book, where Meg is staring up at the timber framing of their forever family dream home that's being built by her husband, Kyle. The background is, yeah, Meg's in her mid-20s, got two kids, Finn, who's 5, and Hallie, who's just turning 3. And I think her looking up at the skeleton house is this moment of clarity. Mm. And she starts to really think, oh, wow, this is being built. This is real. I can see it. I'm going to be stuck in this town forever. Mm-hmm. Where she hadn't really acknowledged that that was her life and that was her future up until this point. And yeah, the closer the house comes to completion, kind of the more the walls metaphorically and literally start to close in and the marriage becomes more controlling. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
What a hook. It's so enticing. I am interested in the structure because there is this beautiful chronological structure of the family story and their life and Meg and Kyle's life spliced with, you've got Meg's bedtime stories mm-hmm. to her child, which reveal a lot about how she has ended up where she has. And then you've also got these little vignettes of her in a helicopter. But without revealing too much, can you kind of explain your choices behind the structure of the book?
Yeah, it's one of those that I sort of wrote the book and then went back and did the structure. I made a few choices because I found that when I was writing, I was trying not to do flashbacks because I really wanted to try to reveal the backstory and some of the history through the modern day and little hints. That's more rewarding as a reader, mm-hmm. you know, to kind of pick things up and connect the dots yourself. But it became clear we needed a little bit more.
Yeah.
And I set myself a rule that anything, and I don't think this is a spoiler because you find out very, very early in the book that Finn is not Meg's husband's son. So she was already pregnant as a teenager and had the baby, and then she and Kyle developed their relationship, got married, and had Hallie.
Yeah, which is a big part of the tension.
Which is a big part of the tension. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. But I told myself that anything that was pre kind of pregnancy mm-hmm. for Finn, that I could not tell it through a flashback. And that was the bedtime mm. stories workaround.
Okay.
And the logic behind that is that Meg is sort of like mentally closed off that part of her life and doesn't let herself think about it. Mm. There's a lot there about unrealized potential. There's a lot of painful memories. There's a lot of, heartbreak and longing. And she's kind of shut the door on that and not let herself think about it. And so that's why it's the bedtime stories that kind of reveal little tidbits from her younger life. Then I do have some flashbacks that are kind of pregnancy forward that I felt was important to kind of show how the marriage developed and kind of, yeah, the kind of the history of her young family with the small children. And then, yeah, we've got a couple of helicopter extracts. So that's the very, very start of the book that Meg is in a helicopter. We don't know why, but something bad has happened because she's on like a medevac, which we call life flight, helicopter ride into Las Vegas. And the reason I put that in is, like you say, it is this kind of slow burn of a book, but I needed to make sure that the reader knew something is going to happen. Like, you have to sit tight here. And
yeah, exactly. It is a slow burn, but still compelling because you are really connected to these characters. You want to know what happens and you want to go through the journey with them. There are lots of really interesting themes and relevant themes in The Skeleton House too. The book kind of came across my desk at the same time that there was that video released on social media of the American footballer Harrison Butker, who gave that very disturbing commencement speech at the university in the States. Very reminiscent of Kyle in the novel, who is the husband. Coercive control and violence against women is a theme in the book, and it unfolds very insidiously, I think, much like in real life.
Yeah.
Did you think a lot about these themes while writing the book yourself?
I did. And it was a difficult topic to research. It was a difficult topic to listen to stories and kind of occupy myself. As part of the writing process, I really do try to get into the heads of all my characters, and sort of spending a little time in Kyle's head was not a fun place to be. but necessary to kind of understand how it unfolds.
Yeah.
One of the reasons why I chose to write about coercive control is that I feel that that's sort of kind of what's missing about the dialogue of male violence and domestic violence in kind of our modern society is that it doesn't come out of nowhere. So we see a headline of yet another woman who is killed at the hands of her current or former partner. And it's almost reported like it's a cyclone, it's a hurricane, it's this huge, crazy force that's come out of nowhere and we never could have predicted it.
Yeah.
And to an outside eye, yeah, that's true. But I refuse to think for one second that there's nothing else that's going on. Mm-hmm. I've done a little bit of research, and in instances of intimate partner homicide, in 82%, at least 82% of those cases, there is clear emotional abuse that is currently happening. You know, these all contribute and lead up. That's the escalation. And I didn't want to write a book where it was the kind of stereotypical portrait of what we see in the news. I wanted to show how it starts, how it escalates. And yeah, I just wanted to explore that to kind of give that, well, what those early red flags are and how it can escalate.
Absolutely. I really appreciated how sensitive you were about those issues and portraying them in a way that wasn't like the hurricane you just described. They're really, they're incremental shifts in behavior. They're not necessarily overt or violent. Mm-hmm. They're almost done in a playful way. A lot of the times, Carl comes across as this very playful and charismatic character, but underpinning that is this controlling behavior that he has towards his wife. So I think it was done really sensitively and with a lot of nuance. Meg does change a lot throughout the story. She grows and learns more about herself and what she wants, and she spends most of the book unpacking her past and her life. What did you learn through the process of writing Meg and writing The Skeleton House?
Oh, wow. That's a massive question, because the first idea for The Skeleton House was about 10 years ago. And so just as a person, a lot of life has happened in a decade.
Yeah, I
learned so much about myself as a writer also through this process, having to go through many, many iterations of the book and a really, really, really harsh edit. That was rewarding. It showed me what I could do in next books to kind of avoid having to do that painful process, and just kind of showed me what I'm good at.
Amazing. You have alluded to future writing and future books. What's next for Catherine Allen?
Winning the Fogarty Literary Award really gave me this boost of confidence. I've written more in the last 12 months than I wrote in like the 5 or 6 years from finishing the first draft of The Skeleton House to it getting published. To winning the award. And I really think that that kind of shows the power of these awards that do find emerging artists and authors, and just, that boost of confidence knowing I am doing something right. Okay, onward and upward, keep going.
Yeah, next one coming very soon. It feels like you've just put this one down. I really do hope so. I thoroughly enjoy your writing, and The Skeleton House is a beautiful debut.
Thank you,
Catherine.
Thank you so much.